Welcome, everybody, to Juwanza for Life, also known as Health, Wealth, and Divine. It's a beautiful day, and I mean beautiful. It is a lovely day outside, depending on where you are, of course. But I saw the sun shining today, felt the warmth of the sun on my body, and it felt good, especially for January. I hope everybody's having a wonderful day, and I got a special treat for you. For all of you entrepreneurs, I know that if you're a follower of the show, you know Professor Joseph Geiger. It's been a while since we've had an opportunity to interview him, but he's back. And you know about the awesome book that he wrote, right? It's called Entrepreneurial Success, The Road to the Top. It's growing, y'all. It's up to 104 business principles. 104. We started off, it was 101. But Professor just keeps adding on and adding on and adding on. The books just keep growing and growing and growing. He's written another book called Finding a Career for Life. We'll tell you about that as well and how you can get both of these books. But for all of you entrepreneurs who are new to the show and you're unfamiliar with Professor Joseph Geiger, again, you're in for a treat. He's got over 50 years experience as an entrepreneur, and he grew up on a Kansas farm and graduated from the School of Business at the University of Denver. And over his time, he actually started over 10 businesses, two of which predated his college graduation. And after his second retirement, he taught entrepreneurship and in small business management at J. Sargent Reynolds Community College, located in Richmond, Virginia, where he currently resides. And he's back with us. We're going to go through the book again, okay, because this information is not something that you can hear one time. And really, I want to give everybody an opportunity that you know how you can get the book, okay? Class is in session, okay? We're talking with Professor Joseph Geiger, and again, I'm going to tell you how you can get the book. This is going to be your textbook as we go through this series. And again, it's my honor and privilege and pleasure to have you back, Professor. Welcome back to Health, Wealth, and Divine.
Thank you very much for having me.
It's my pleasure, Professor. I'm always, you know, whenever I'm talking to an entrepreneur, I always ask them, I'm always promoting your book because I know that if I'm talking to an entrepreneur that the information in the book can save them a lot of time, a lot of energy, a lot of heartache, and a lot of money if they follow the principles in the book. And not just save them money, can actually make them money. You know, a lot of entrepreneurs are into it for various reasons, one of which for some is to, you know, make money. I mean, you don't want to lose money. Well, if you follow the principles outlined in the book, it can not only save you money, but it can actually make you money. And for the price of the book, it's really a no-brainer. So I really want to encourage people to listen intently, take notes, and again, when the time comes, I'm going to share information with you on how you can get the book, Entrepreneurial Success, The Road to the Top. But for those who are just tuning in, Professor, who are new listeners since the last time you've been on, and I want to say welcome to all of the new listeners, please, if you don't mind sharing your story, how you got into entrepreneurship. Again, you've been doing it for over 50 years. You've been doing it before the word became popular even. So for the listeners who are just tuning in who haven't heard your story, what got you started as an entrepreneur?
I don't know. I went away to, I guess what started me, the first business I ever had, it was in high school, and I was sent away to school because I'm dyslexic. At the time, the term was not in the lexicon. I just couldn't read very well. And I had a marvelous memory for the spoken word, but I couldn't read very well, and so my family sent me away to a school in New England. And it's a rather expensive school, but we came from a small Kansas town, and the only reason I got in there was because the school wanted students from all over the country. And so I was from Kansas, and so I got in, and all the students got an allowance. Well, I didn't get one. And so, my parents really didn't have the money, and they didn't also have the inclination, I think, where a lot of the kids were getting $10 and $20 a week. And my goodness, this was, I'm 80 now, so this was 65 years ago, more than that. when $20 was a lot of money. So
like 200, huh?
Yeah. Well, actually, probably more than that. The one of the things that I have here, one of the principles, talk about a particular time before I was when I was a junior in college, and at that time, $18 was $151 in today's dollars. $18 in 1958 was 151 or 153 today, actually. So at any rate, so I wanted to go to the what was the PX for the school, which was out in the middle of nowhere. It was 4 miles to the nearest town. And so I wanted to have some money to go there, and so I started a little business delivering papers. And unlike most delivery papers, there weren't any there, so I had to find out where the New York Times, who had the New York Times franchise for that area, and got them to give me papers, and I wanted them to just give them to me on the cuff. They wouldn't do it, so I had to get 20 students to pay me in advance for the Sunday paper, which I was able to do, and then I bought papers. And I was a sophomore then, and so by my senior year, I had about right at 100 papers that I delivered, and so I had money. And that was my first business, and it was kind of necessity. The same thing happened when I was in college, and I was living in a little basement apartment under an elderly lady's home, and I didn't really have barely enough money for gas, much less anything else. So I started another business to make little tiny trout flies, and that's the one that I could make, 3, 6, 9 of them in an hour, and I got $18 for the 9 trout flies, which today would be $153, and it took me an hour to do it, to make them. So I was making them and selling them to a very fancy sporting goods store in Denver, Colorado. So that's kind of why I started the businesses, because I needed an income. And I didn't have one. And so I found the opportunity, and we'll talk about that in the weeks to come. How do you find opportunities? They're very easy to find, and I'll teach you how to do that. It's simple to do. That's how I started in the business. And
well,
since then, I built 11 businesses, started 11 businesses, all from scratch.
Well, let me ask you this, Professor, because as an entrepreneur, again, being one before the name was even popular back then, when you were doing that, when you were selling your wares to your customers, did the other people your age, how did they view you? I mean, did they view you as being different or special? Or
no.
Did they feel like
they
want to get in on it? And,
no,
you know,
I don't think so. Not really. When I left the high school when I graduated, I had this business, and I had to find a way to turn it into cash or just abandon it. I mean, that was my choice, because I wasn't coming back the next year. I was going on to college at Colorado College in Colorado Springs. And so I found a couple of kids who were interested, and what I did is I sold the business actually to their parents because they didn't have the kind of money I wanted. And so I sold the business to their parents. And the way I did it was to say, this is a way for little Johnny to learn something about business. And, you know, he has an interest in doing it, but it's a discipline. I mean, you have to deliver the papers every Sunday. You can't sleep in, not one. If you get sick, you have to deliver the papers. So getting sick is not an excuse. Wanting to sleep in is not an excuse. And so the parents showed the real interest. Now, some of the kids wanted the income, but I don't think they understood the work involved. I tried to find somebody to help me with the business, and I was never successful. They just weren't dependable enough. And I don't know whether the kid I sold the business to was dependable or not. I hope he was, but I don't know. His dad paid me quite a bit of money for the business. And basically what I did, I monetized it, how much I made. And I said, well, he's a sophomore, so he has 3 years, and pay me for the first year. And frankly, about two-thirds of his customer base is already there because they were already my customer base, and the seniors would leave, but the juniors and sophomores and others who took the paper would still be there. But no, they didn't. And the same way when I was in college, they didn't. And I've never figured that out, why that is, but it's fairly common. And I've had people say over and over again, how do you start these things? I mean, it's not all that difficult. It really isn't. People think it is, but it really isn't.
Well, were you encouraged by your parents to consider becoming an entrepreneur? Again, keeping in mind that
Not really. Juwan, my dad wanted me to be a what would now be a petroleum engineer. At that time, I mean, they didn't have that when in the 1950s. What you did, if you were interested in petroleum engineering, you got a degree as a geologist, and then you went to work for a petroleum company. And that's what he wanted me to do. And my first year and a half in college was in that direction. And I just realized after a year and a half that's not where my heart was. My heart was in business. So I switched when I went to the University of Denver to their business school and stuck there.
Well, how did the book come about, Professor? I mean, because I'm holding in my hand a book that I've read several times, Entrepreneurial Success, The Road to the Top, up to now 104 Business Principles. How did all of that, you know, all of your years of over 5 decades of being an entrepreneur translate into this book that I'm holding? How did you?
Well, I was teaching classes, and I realized that the stuff that I was teaching from the textbooks was all well and good, but very little of it was actually executable. In other words, if you're a professor or you're just a student in business and you've never been there, all of this business stuff, small business management and entrepreneurship, the books that I had, are all well and good. But if you've ever been one, what you want is something that's executable. In other words, how do you do something? I'll give you a great example. Let's say that you are in business and you have a motel and you want to advertise it on with a billboard. How do you write a billboard? How do you write the copy? You can go to somebody and get them to do it for you and hope like heck they have some idea of what they're doing, but they may and they may not. But what are the rules? How do you do it? And what the textbooks will say, well, you have to have an attractive sign. It has to catch people's attention. It has to, focus their attention and be bright and so on. How do you execute that? I don't have a clue how you execute it. So my take on that is called the Rule of Seven. And the Rule of Seven says if you want to have a billboard, you're allowed 7 words and 1 picture. And the words have to tell people, the words and the picture have to tell people what it is, where it is, and how to get there. That's all it has to convey. And you have to do it with a picture and 7 words. Now, can you do that? Sure. pick a pretty picture and pick 7 words that tell people what it is, where it is, and how to get there. That's all you have to do.
7, but not 8, not 9.
Not 8, not 9, but 7. If you can do it in 6, fine. But people can read 7 words driving down the highway. There have been all kinds of tests on this, and that's what works. When you get to 8, they begin to drop out, and by the time you get to 10 words, nobody's reading it. Now, drive down a road and see, try me, and you'll find out while I'm telling you the truth. What that means is you can't have a phone number. How many words are in a phone number? Well, my phone number is 300-3006. How many words is that? That's 7 words. So you can have a phone number up there in a picture, and that's it. Nothing else. Because you've used up your 7 words. So you can't have a phone number. That's the kinds of things that are in my book. It's actually 105 principles now. And they're all executable. In other words, they're simple enough, and they're something you can actually do. And if you're a business person, that's the kind of stuff you want. It's something you can actually do. Not this ethereal, you know, ivory tower stuff. And that's the problem with most of the textbooks. None of it is executable. And if you're in business, the only thing you're interested in is what is executable. If you can't execute it, I don't want it. I don't need to know it. I mean, I might want to know it just out of idle curiosity, but as far as for the business, if I can't execute it, I don't care about it.
You know, although this book could benefit people that are already in business, people that might have been in business for years, I think particularly for those who are just starting out, you know, because so many businesses fail within the first year, you know,
right.
While
half.
The business, you know, half, oh, wow,
half.
That's a scary figure.
That is.
Half. And
half
the other half might,
you
know,
year.
It might fall off in the second year. Not
yeah,
all,
well,
but of
actually,
course.
Well, actually, by the end of the third year, 25% of what started are still going. Half fail in the first year, and of the remaining, another half fail in the next 2 years.
So it's clear that people definitely need a compass to navigate the waters of business.
Right.
I mean, it can be some rough going at times, especially when you got your training wheels on, you're just starting out, you've never done it before, you really don't know what you're doing. But with a guide like the book that you've written, it can really help reduce the, if not eliminate, for those who take the principles and actually utilize them, you can just eliminate the possibility even of, or definitely
well,
reduce the possibility.
Well, I think that's a bit much. You eliminate the possibility. The possibility is always going to be there. What you can do is you can not make foolish errors. The reason that half of all the businesses fail in the first year is that slightly over half do not have a real business plan. Most of the businesses who start, small businesses that start, have no business plan. And if they do have one, it's a single page outline that's kind of worthless. So I teach people how do you do a business plan in great detail. I mean, not just an outline thing. How do you a real business plan? Something that you can take to an investor or to a bank, and they won't laugh you out of the place. They'll say, "Hey, this person has an idea what the heck they're doing." So
one that you've written yourself, of course, and not paid
somebody
else.
Oh yeah, absolutely, absolutely. I mean, they'll find out, a good banker or a good investor is going to find out really quickly whether you wrote it or somebody else wrote it. Because all they have to do is read it and then ask you some very specific questions, and they'll find out whether you really know it. And if you don't know your business plan upside down and backwards, what makes you think that anybody would invest with you? Nothing. There's nobody with any brains who would invest with you if they don't think that you really know your plan and you don't have a really good plan. So that's one of the basics. But with 105 principles, a lot of these textbooks and business books have just a few principles, a few things, and they'll say, follow my five principles and get rich. Well, that's great, except unfortunately, there's way, way more than five challenges that you're going to have. What I've tried to do is to, after starting so many businesses and been at it for so long, is go back in my experience and say, how do I solve this problem? And is an advertising problem a common problem? Yes, it is. Is raising money a common problem? Yes, it is. Is planning a common problem? Absolutely. So you try to break it down, and what you find in business is the problems tend to be fairly small problems. They're very specific problems. And unless you have a solution to your specific problem, it doesn't do you much good. Reading, for example, about how General Electric has been very successful is great. I mean, it's really an interesting read. However, for somebody with $10,000, nothing that they have done applies to you. Nothing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So they may have been terrifically successful in something, but it doesn't apply to you. Reading about how Jeff Bezos got Amazon going doesn't apply to you, because he got it going, and what he got the idea of an online, originally selling books online, going thanks to a very overheated stock market that fell in love with his idea and gave him hundreds and hundreds of millions of dollars over many years. He kept losing money, and they kept giving him more money. Now, none of that is applicable to a guy or a lady who wants to start a dress store or a hardware store. Nothing he did, all of his success, has anything to do with those two things. So, but they can read my book, and it does have something to do with it, a whole lot to do with it.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, we've talked about the book, and I can't wait to get into the book again, and I encourage everybody, we're going to tell you how you can get the book. But we're going to take a couple of principles tonight, starting with the very first principle in the very first chapter. The very first chapter is titled Principles for Business and Life. And you'll see as we go through the book that these principles do not just apply to business, but you can also use these principles for life as well. So let's start with chapter one, everybody. Here we go. We're in class. Class is in session. The bell has just rung. Okay, so Professor, principle number one is titled What's the Downside? Now, I know a lot of people, when starting out, are very optimistic. They're, you know, very excited about their business, and, you know, they have high expectations, and, you know, they don't even want to consider the downside. You know, they just, all they want to do is think positive. Think positive. Just, you know, they've listened to all the motivational speakers, and, you know, they just want to think positive. They don't want to even consider what's the downside. But you have to consider the downside. Could you talk about principle number one, what's the downside?
Yeah, there's really two parts to this. One is the obvious part that is what's downside. In other words, where can you go wrong? Where can you lose? What is it that's going to alienate people and or isn't going to work? And everybody, I think, pretty well understands that. But there is another portion of this question of what's the downside that I hear all the time that people don't think about. So, and I give an example here of a business I started that was a concession business. And after I got the contract, I went there and I found out that all the Coca-Cola dispensing equipment was gone. It was at the University of Wichita Kansas there for their sporting, their basketball and football games, and all of the all the dispensing equipment was gone. And I, goodness gracious, I didn't expect that. I thought that belonged to the university, but it did not. It belonged to the concessionaire, I found out. So I went to Coca-Cola and I said, "Hey, how about lending me some dispensers and I'll sell your product?" And they said, "Yeah, well, that's not the way it works. You buy the dispensers and then you can sell our product." And I thought, well, this isn't going to work. I hadn't quite planned on that. And
right.
Each of those dispensers was the better part of $1,000. So I said, well, gee, why don't you just lend them to me? No, we don't do that. So I said, well, I'll have to go to Pepsi-Cola. And the guy, I can remember the guy looking me straight in the face and say, "Young man, you can go wherever you want, but we're not lending you anything. You want to buy it? Fine." So what's the downside? People said, this is where this question comes in. What's the downside of my going to Coca-Cola? Well, I mm-hmm. might get turned down, but I might not. So where I was at that point, I had already been turned down. So if Coca-Cola
right.
turned me down, now I've got two who have turned me down. But maybe they wouldn't. So what's the downside? Well, there isn't a downside. There's zero downside. I hear people all the time saying, well, I'd like to do thus and so, but they, whoever they is, aren't going to let me do it or aren't going to agree with it. How do you know that? Yeah, what's the downside? Go try.
Mm-hmm.
The worst they can do is say no. And so then you are right where you are now. Where you are now is, in my Coca-Cola thing, is I don't have any dispensers and I have to have them and I don't really have the money to buy them. So what's the downside of asking Pepsi-Cola? There was no downside. The only thing they could tell me two things, yes or no. If they said no, I'm right where I was, zero downside. Mm-hmm. If they said yes, that's a big upside. So mm-hmm. I went to them and they not only said yes, they said, "We will design and build at our expense special equipment for your 11 dispensers and the one where you fill drinks for the young people going out through the stands with the big trays. And we'll do it at our expense. And if you want to buy them after a year, you can, and we'll sell them to you for 60 cents on the dollar, and we'll supply costs to you, invoices to you." So, so I learned something there. There was no downside. And people lose opportunities all the time because they say they, whoever they is, won't let me do it. Well, try. There is no downside. Now, maybe there is a downside in something, and you should try to figure that out. But in most cases, there is no downside. There's only an upside. They can say no, and you're right where you are now, so thus there is no downside. Or they can say yes or maybe, and there is an upside. So that's where
you know, I really love this principle, and it makes me think about even when considering, well, what's the downside? If there's no downside, you're still dealing, when you're dealing in business, you're dealing with people who also have a bottom line, who are also in business to make a profit as well. So we saw how you made out with that. You know, but I'm sure it was win-win. What was in it for Pepsi?
Pepsi is that what I found out later is that Coca-Cola had had a lock on the major markets in Wichita, Kansas. All the major venues Coca-Cola had. Pepsi didn't have a single one. And the University of Wichita's basketball stadium was the largest stadium in all of Wichita. So if there was a circus that came in, that's where they went because it was the largest. if there was a big symphonic concert from outside, that's where they went. If today P. Diddy had a big show, that's where he would have gone then, or anyone else. So they really wanted to get in there. They'd wanted to get in there for years and years, but Coca-Cola had it locked up. And when I went to it, if I had said, well, you build the stuff and then you give it to me and I'll sell your product, they'd have been happy to do that. Mm-hmm. Because they had it. They wanted a entrance into that market, and they had been trying for years and years with no success. The City Coliseum, Coca-Cola had. Every major venue in there was a racetrack, Coca-Cola had. Coca-Cola had everything, and Pepsi dearly wanted to, and this was their opportunity to get into a nice place, and instead of having a bunch of cheesy dispensers there, they had all these fancy stainless steel, beautiful things. It was great, and it was great for them. So it was an upside
problem
for them, too.
Yeah, you solved the business problem for them.
Absolutely. I didn't know it at the time, but, if I had known it at the time, I wouldn't have bothered to go to Coke. I'd have gone right to PepsiCo.
Mm-hmm.
But, doing what I know now, but at that time I didn't know it. So
that's
same thing happens over and over again. People limit their opportunities because they're afraid of a non-existent downside.
Mm.
They're afraid somebody will say no. Well, you don't know whether they'll say no. I mean, all of us guys have been told no at least once in our lives. but for some reason,
you end up marrying
I,
the person that you said
yeah,
no. In many cases,
I have seen adults that are bright people with lots of experience do this same thing. It is very, very common. And so, ask yourself, what's the downside if you get a no answer? Well, there is no downside because you're already at no.
Mm-hmm. Well, everybody, that was principle number one, okay? And as you can see how the rest of the book is going to go, right? I mean, that was awesome. Professor, number two is decisions should be data-driven. A lot of times people in business are very emotional, emotional. And so decisions should be data-driven. Professor?
Well, this is an old, old one. This is the second one here. But this principle was discovered and first put in print, and it's still in print, by the oldest book ever written that's currently in print. People think that it's the oldest book that's ever written is the Christian Bible. Actually, it's Sun Tzu's The Art of War, which was written over 2,500 years ago by a Chinese general. And in The Art of War, Sun Tzu says, seek knowledge and use information to focus resources. Well, that's kind of Chinese, And my daughter came up with the English version of that is decisions should be data-driven. And basically it says that find out the data behind whatever you're going to do. In other words, if you have a problem, you need to define the problem. You need to find the solution to the problem. And how do you do that? You do what Sun Tzu says, seek knowledge and focus resources. And if you do that, you will succeed way more often than you'll fail. And many, many people don't do that. Young entrepreneurs, me included, when I had a problem, I'd start doing stuff. I would immediately start trying to solve the problem by doing stuff. There was no planning. There was no seeking information. There was no focusing resources. There was just doing stuff. And very often the stuff I did didn't work out too well. I would suggest that probably over half the time it didn't work out very well. So if you follow the principle of decision should be data-driven, don't make a decision unless you have the data to back it up. So first you have to find out what you want to do, and the way you do that is seek information. And then once you have the information, then you focus your resources.
And you know
so
what?
It's a simple, simple principle.
You know, I was saying that I think that it's important to emphasize for the people who are hearing this principle that it's important to get reliable data. You know, because if somebody emotional and they want to hold on to their way of thinking, they may only listen to people who are providing them with the data that they want to hear. You know, so
absolutely
it's important to make sure that the data that you're receiving is reliable data, not just data that you want to hear to support your already, or your decision that you've already made that don't want to let go of. Could you talk about that?
Well, I think that you need to, whenever you have, you're looking for data, information, you really need to understand that there's two sides of many questions. Now, maybe some of them you think are poorly served by one side, but nevertheless, you need to know what that side is. And you need to know the upsides and the downsides. What's the cost of it, and what's the rewards? And where do the costs come from? When do they come? Is there any way I can get the money to cover these costs? And what are the rewards? How long does it take for a reward to show up after I've gone through the cost part? So you have to have both sides. And if you look down your and you need to put this in writing. That's another biggie. That whenever you're doing one of these problems, for God's sakes, put it in writing. Now, you don't need to be a Shakespeare, for goodness sakes, but you do need to have at least a bullet point outline. And there needs to be both on the plus side and the minus side. And if you find out that virtually everything you have is on one side, you better start focusing on the other side and say, why don't I have things on the other side? Because they're there. And I'm going to discover they're there once I get into this, and it bites my rump off. So maybe I'd better find out about it now before it bites my rump off.
Everybody, we are going through the book chapter by chapter, principle by principle. It's called Entrepreneurial Success, The Road to the Top, 105 business principles. Now with Professor Joseph T. Geiger. I told you this book just keeps on growing. We're up to principle number 3 now, which is to what end? A lot of times people, like you mentioned, Professor, you said when you had a problem, you just started doing stuff. You know, need to understand, why am I doing this? What's the end goal?
Right.
Why am I trying to achieve here? Could you talk about to what end?
Well, that is the reason it is the first among the first 7 or 8 principles is because this is something that turns up all the time, like the previous two. You cannot hardly make any kind of a decision or look at any kind of course of action without first asking yourself, to what end am I going to do this? And if you don't have a good reason for it, you ought not to do it. Because there's probably going to be pluses and minuses, and if you don't have a plus, that doesn't mean that the minuses aren't there. They're there. You just haven't discovered them yet. But just go ahead and do it, and then you'll get to discover them. And it probably will be an unfun activity when you do discover what they are. So it is a very fundamental. Almost, I think I can say, almost whatever kind of a situation you're in, you must ask yourself, to what end am I going to do this? And if you don't have an end goal, you're in deep trouble. Many of my businesses, I have encouraged my employees to come up with ideas. The people out actually doing it, whether they're a manufacturer, you're a manufacturer, or you're a service organization, the people actually doing the manufacturing, working the machines, sending out the end result, the packages, doing the service, they're going to know more about their specific little job. I shouldn't say little, but their specific job than you ever will know. I mean, after all, unless they're total dopes, and you're not going to, you know, you're going to call those out really quickly. They're going to know more about this than you do. And I used to encourage people to come to me with any kind of ideas that they had. And the first question I would ask them every single time, to what end do you want to do this? And they better have a good reason. If they didn't have a good reason, well, then the conversation was kind of over. So, and that is true of almost anything you're going to do. And this, of course, is true in your regular life as well as in business. That, you know, to what end am I gonna do this? And it doesn't make any difference whether you're looking for a date or you're trying to start a business. You're going to build a house. The first questions you should ask yourself is, to what end am I going to do this? And you better have a good answer. Because if you don't have a good answer, don't do it. They're going to be.
And this is a rhetorical, Professor, but how much specificity should someone have in answering that question? Because somebody just starting in business, you could ask them, so why do you want to go into business? They could just be vague, to make money. You know, just vague, to make money, you know, which of course is the reason why nobody wants, again, to lose money. But beyond just to make money, you got to go deeper than that.
Yeah, you surely do. Because if you don't have a passion for it, just remember, somebody else will. The person you're competing against is going to have a real passion for whatever they're doing, almost regardless of what it is. And if you don't, they're going to win. I'll tell you that right now. I mean, like you say, making money is fine. Making money is kind of what is what should happen at the end of it, but that's not the number one target area here. The number
Almost
one target area is you know, because you have a real passion for doing something.
The money's
so,
just the icing on the cake.
That's right. That's right. The profit is the icing on the cake. The profit shows that you did a good job of planning and you did a good job of executing your plans. But you should have at least some specificity. Vague generalities aren't going to get it. Because just remember, there's somebody else out there in all likelihood that's doing the same thing you want to do. Now, maybe you think you can do it better. Maybe you think you have a better product, on and on and on. But if you don't have a real passion for it, they're going to beat you.
You know, Professor, the next principle is one that I think a lot of people, well, all of them are principles that people can benefit from, but this one's one of my favorites. You get what you negotiate, not what you deserve. You get what you negotiate. You deserve. Everybody that's working a 9-to-5 feels like they deserve more money. You know what I mean?
How many times have you heard on television or read in the paper some person saying, I deserve whatever? Well, if you were lucky enough to be born or be a citizen of the United States of America, you deserve life, you deserve liberty, and you deserve the pursuit of happiness, not the success, just the pursuit. That's what you deserve, nothing more. And if you're in many other countries in the world, you don't even deserve those things. There's a whole lot of countries that liberty and the pursuit of happiness is not part of the package. And in a few of them, life isn't really part of the package either, it seems like. But the negotiates, how do you negotiate? And most of us, the vast, vast majority, we're not Donald Trumps. We're not good at it. We don't have a skill for it. I certainly do not. I think I'm fairly good at it now because I've done it for 60 years. But I'm not a born negotiator. So you get what you negotiate. So what are the principles that you should have when you negotiate? The first principle is do not ever negotiate with yourself. And I hear people doing that all the time. And essentially what that is you and somebody else are sitting there and you make a proposition, you make an offer. And they say, nope, not interested. So you make another offer. And they say, I don't think quite that either. So you make another offer. What are negotiations going on here? None. You're negotiating with yourself. They're just sitting there, you know, getting you to spill your guts.
Come down lower and lower and lower, go higher and higher and higher and higher.
So what you should do is you make an offer, and if they say not interested, you say, well, what's your side? What do you want? And if they're not willing to say, gee, this session's gone. We're finished.
Mm-hmm.
The second thing is be prepared. It's not possible to know too much about who you're negotiating with, what the issues are. The more you know, the better you're going to be. So try do some real research before you start in your negotiation. The third part is take notes. Physically take notes. The best negotiator I ever worked with was an old guy with an absolutely photographic memory, and he always took notes. And Mr. Pat Ashby did not need to take notes to jog his memory, but he took notes to let others know that he was taking notes. And so that's why he took notes. And he listened very, very intently to what others said. Because I used to sit in, and although I didn't take a part of it, I would sit in and watch him go at it with people. And it was just fascinating. So that's the third thing. The fourth thing is don't hesitate to ask for what you really want. If you don't ask for it, you're not going to get it. So if you really want, well, I'll make it really simple, $1,000 for something, and you only ask for $800, the odds of them paying you $1,000 are very poor. You might not get $100. You might not get $800. But you're surely not going to get $1,000 because you didn't ask for $1,000. So ask for what you really want. When I went to Pepsi-Cola, I asked for what I really wanted. Now, I wasn't sophisticated enough to understand, and I didn't do enough research to understand how badly they wanted, Pepsi-Cola wanted, to be in the venues that I had the concession on. Had I done that, I probably could have gotten an even better deal.
Mm-hmm.
But I didn't do that. I mean, I was kind of young and, you know, very wet behind the ears. So ask for what you want. So in that negotiation with Pepsi-Cola, I did know enough not to negotiate with myself. I was not prepared. I did not take notes, and I did not ask for what I really wanted. I asked for what I thought I could get. That's a mistake. You ask for what you really want. And because they can always say no, but we'll give you something else, or we won't give you anything. But nevertheless, you ask for what you want. And the last part of it, the only good outcome is an outcome that's good for both parties. Sun Tzu said in The Art of War, everyone must profit from victory or the war will resume at a later date. And boy, is that one true. that's the reason for the Second World War is because at the end of the First World War, the victors just crushed Germany, and they went away thinking they had been had, and so they started the Second World War. If you, in business, if both people come out ahead, your deal will get better over time. And if one person gets feels like they've been had, the deal will fall apart over time. So those are the five simple principles of how you negotiate. Sun Tzu said, keep it simple. And I try to do that all the time. I try to have my principles very, very simple, easy to remember.
So you know, what's interesting about what was interesting about that is that in order to do that, you have to not only go in not just knowing what you want to ask for what you want, but you have to also know what the other person wants or needs.
Absolutely.
Even, you know, because if you can satisfy a need, you could be satisfying a need and a want at the same time because they may want what they need.
Sure, sure. And like I say, just not really criticizing myself, but I was young and I was not foolish. And these are, but at that time I had not come up with all this. It was only after over a long period of time that I came up with these principles. This one on negotiation was to some extent watching Mr. Pat Ashby negotiate and how he did it and what he did. And I'd ask him, I really played driver for him. I went along because his wife wanted somebody to drive for him. And he was in his, when I knew Mr. Ashby, he was in his 70s, and I was in my late 20s. And but I was the only employee he had who had ever owned a business. And so we had something that he did not have with any of his other employees. So he had me drive, and I just sit there like a, you know, with my ears open and mouth shut, and listen to him. Yeah, and be a sponge. And then afterwards, ask questions. And it was through Mr. Ashby that I really figured out how you negotiate.
Well, everybody, we've just covered a couple of principles, and when we come back next time, we're going to be starting on principle number 5, which is know what you are not good at. Okay, so just to give you a little, whet your appetite a little bit, know what you're not good at. In the meantime, you can get the book, okay? You don't have to wait until the next show, okay? In the meantime, you can actually purchase the book. Again, it's called Entrepreneurial Success, The Road to the Top, 105 Business Principles Now by Professor Joseph T. Geiger. Professor, for those who are interested, and I know they are, how can they purchase your book?
Well, they can get it online through Amazon, or they can get it online through me and my little website, which is theroadtothetop.com. So you can get it there. You can get both of them there, and you can get both books at Amazon. The only difference is that if you order it from me, it costs the same, but I sign them. And when you order it from Amazon, they ship one out to you right away, and, of course, they don't sign it. So other than that, it's the same. The Entrepreneurial Success, The Road to the Top, is essentially $19. It's $18.95. And plus mailing, and the other one is $9.95. Finding a Career for Life is $9.95, and that's basically a little book that's put together. It's only about 75 pages. The Road to the Top is now 365 pages. Originally, it was 355 pages, and originally it was 90 pages less. But I added a lot to the fourth edition now with 105 principles. And the other short book is just trying to take the mystery and the bias out of out of a young person trying to find a career for life. And it goes through in a very, very unbiased way of what college will do, what it won't do, what your high school, if you're a high school kid, and what you're qualified for without further education, and how much these things pay, how much people like their job, whether they think it's a great job or not. You'll hear, for example, that the more education you get, the more you get paid, and that's patently not true. Actually, the highest paying job, according to the Department of Labor Statistics, is a bachelor's degree in petroleum engineering. And that pays at least 25% more than any PhD out there.
Hmm.
Now, medical MDs are the highest paid. But as far as just the job is concerned, if you have a PhD in physics, you're not going to get paid on average anywhere close to somebody who has a bachelor's degree in petroleum engineering. And that's been true for years. The colleges won't tell you that. They'll tell you such fairy tales like if you get a degree in psychiatry or psychology, rather, psychiatry is an MD, but psychology, you'll get a good job, and that's patently not true. Nobody will hire you based on a bachelor's degree in psychology. That's just there is no market for that. As a PhD, a small one, but heck, a petroleum engineer will make more every 2 months than a PhD in psychology will make in a year. And they like what they're doing.
That's what I was going to say. It's in the book, is not about, again, it's not about what you prefer or what you don't prefer, because somebody might say, well, I like physics, you know what I mean? I don't like petroleum engineering. That's not the point. He's just
right.
Giving you the fact.
Yeah, that, I'm not trying to sway you in any direction. Well, I mean, one of the first things I say in there is do what you love and what you're good at doing, and regardless of what that is, that's where you ought to be. However, if you're really in love with psychology and you want to be get a degree in psychology, just understand what your financial options are. And don't think that if you get a bachelor's degree in psychology or a bachelor's degree in petroleum engineering, they're both going to cost the same. The big difference is the petroleum engineer mid-career will be making $175,000 to $180,000, the average. And the average,
he'll be able to pay off his student loans a lot quicker, huh?
Oh, yeah, in a couple of months. And the average psychology will be lucky to make $50,000. So, you still got to eat. And housing costs the same, and whoever is renting you an apartment doesn't care whether you're making $180,000 or $40,000. They want the same for their apartment. So, and also in the book, it talks about whether or not whether people like what they're doing. And that information is very, very hard to find, whether they like what you're doing. I go through colleges and whether students really like a college. I mean, trying to find that information is blooming impossible, but there's a way to do it. And I figured out the way, and it's published there. And you can all the sources that I use are right there. So you can just type them in your own computer, and if I don't talk about a particular thing you're interested in, but you want the data on that basic thing, I tell you how to find it. And it also tells you where are the top cities to go to, about the top 150 cities in the country. Where is the best to go to from a job point of view? Where is the worst? and that information is there. So there's all kinds of information. And I view this book as an information book. I redo it every year. So it's, and I'm just getting ready to do the 2018. It's pretty well finished, and but it's not quite out. But there's not a lot of change. I mean, there's some slow change, but not very fast change. For example, if you were interested in nursing, being a nurse practitioner went from 9th place to 7th place to 2nd place, I think now, is 2nd place in the last 3 years. So, you know, there's, and the book talks about how you build a career. I mean, it's, if you had the good sense to be born to very rich parents who can afford to support you for 10 years in college, that's great. But what if you weren't so fortunate to be born to rich parents? What then? And it talks about that, how you do, you know, handle those kind of circumstances.
You know, Professor, it still amuses me how, you know, the vast contrast between the two books. I mean, one is a book written with over 50 years of entrepreneurial experience, and then the other one is talking about how to find a career for life. Again, and keeping in mind that the Career for Life book is not a judgment book at all. It's not saying you should, it's not saying you shouldn't, but there are a lot of details. I've read the book. There's a lot of details. He gets into a lot of specific details. You'd be surprised at the depth with which Professor goes into that book, and it's just a great benefit to those who have, especially young people in their lives who are kind of at that age where they're not kind of sure where they want to go, what they want to do with their life, you know, keeping in mind that when they decide, if they decide to go to college, it's going to cost them the same. The student loans are the same, right? It's going to cost the same to student loans are going to be the same for the petroleum engineer as they are for the physicist. But the only difference is how quick are you going to be able to pay it back?
Right. Yep, and what your life will be. And that doesn't mean that I specifically warn people about getting too enamored about the salaries, because if you hate it, you're going to still hate it, whether it pays $200,000 a year or it pays $30,000 a year. It'll just take you a little longer to hate it if it's paying you $200,000 a year, but you're still going to hate it.
Yep, you only love payday. You hate getting up going to work every day.
Yeah, that's right. That's a great way of putting it. I never thought of it that way. You'll love payday, but all the rest of them suck.
Everybody, my special guest today is Professor Joseph T. Geiger, author of the awesome book, Entrepreneurial Success, the book keeps growing, 105 Business Principles, The Road to the Top. Again, go to theroadtothetop.com, and you can decide whether you want to get it through Amazon or if you want Professor to sign it. Why not get the autograph copy? And with it, while you're there, get the cash flow forecast, too. We'll talk about that in a subsequent show, but you're going to need that, okay? So between now and the next time, Professor's going to be coming on at least once a month. And, again, get the book, though, so that the next time he comes on, you will have gotten the book, read ahead, and that you know, you'll be able to call in with your questions and comments as well. Professor, great show. Awesome as always. Any parting words for our listeners today?
Not really. Just the first four principles that we went through are things that have application for business, but they also have application for your everyday life.
Well, everybody, next time when Professor comes back, we're going to be picking up with Principle 5, know what you are not good at. That's a very important question, because a lot of people are still yet to answer that, and it is costing them every day. So remember, next time, know what you are not good at, okay? So until then, Professor, thank you again, as always. I look forward to the next show. I'm going to see if we can get you back on before next month, because this information is powerful, and a lot of people are definitely in need of it. Thank you so much for being my guest again today.
Thank you, sir. Bye.
All right. Great day. Everybody, that was Professor Joseph T. Geiger, author of the awesome book, entrepreneurial success, the road to the top 104 business principles. Again, you need the book. If you are an entrepreneur, you need this book. Even if you've been in business for a while, get the book. I mean, there's 105 business principles. Some you may know, some you may not know. We can always learn something new, right? So get the book, and when Professor Geiger comes back on, you will have read it, read ahead. I'm telling you, it's a good book. I mean, I've read it several times, and I encourage everybody to get it as well. Got a couple of announcements to make. First, let me thank everybody for tuning in. I certainly appreciate your time. I don't assume that you could not be doing anything else. On January the 27th, Dr. Ruby Latham, who's also a regular on the show, is going to be hosting the Re-Engineer Your Life Holistic Health Summit. That's right. It's the Re-Engineer Your Life Holistic Health Summit. That's on January the 27th, of course, 2018, and it's going to be starting at 9 a.m. until 4:30 p.m. Prior to the start of the summit, there's going to be a free yoga class. That's going to be from 8:15 to 9. They decided that they want to make sure that if you're a yoga practitioner that you still get your yoga on. You know, a lot of times people, they don't want to miss their yoga, right? So you can get your free yoga class on from 8:15 to 9. Again, that's going to be on January the 27th from 9 to 4:30 p.m. Summit highlights include there's going to be a summit wellness fair. There'll be keynote addresses by Dr. Latham as well as other fabulous holistic health all-stars. And it's going to be, again, the free yoga morning class. There'll be free giveaways. There's going to be a plant-based continental breakfast and luncheon. They're doing this for the fourth year, and the address there is going to be held at the Catholic University campus. It's 3600 John McCormick Drive, and that's Northeast Washington, D.C., and the zip code there is 20017. If you'd like more information, like, you know, how much is the cost, again, I said that the yoga class is free, but the whole event isn't free. So for more information on that, go to www.myhealthsummit.com. Again, that's www.myhealthsummit.com. Again, if you know Dr. Latham, she's got a powerful, powerful testimony of reversing her thyroid cancer diagnosis. The doctors had diagnosed her with thyroid cancer and wanted to remove it, and she decided, no, I don't know if I want to go that route. As a matter of fact, I know I don't want to go that route. So she started doing research and found that adopting a plant-based diet had its benefits. You could actually reverse your conditions. And so she tried it, and guess what? It worked. She went back to the doctors after months of changing her lifestyle, changing her eating patterns, and the cancer was gone. And since then, she's gone about teaching others how to take back control of their lives through adopting a plant-based diet and making some lifestyle changes too. So you definitely want to go hear Dr. Latham speak. She's an awesome, again, powerful speaker. She's in the archives, okay? So if you'd like to just scroll down the archives, if you're tuning in for the first time, we have archives that's awesome. Scroll down the archives where you see Dr. Latham's name, just click. We've talked about everything from thyroid cancer to erectile dysfunction, okay, and everything in between. Cervical cancer, I mean, breast cancer, prostate cancer, depression, obesity, I mean, you name it, we've talked about it. Scroll down the archives, you'll be glad that you did. Also, got another announcement. On February the 3rd, the Osara Set Society in Washington, D.C. is going to be hosting a workshop on African names. Okay, that's February the 3rd. That's Saturday, February the 3rd, starting at 5 p.m. And that's at 6224 3rd Street, Northwest, Washington, D.C. The zip code there, in case you need to MapQuest it, is 20011. Again, that's African names. As a matter of fact, while I'm talking about that, let me just plug a book. It's called African Names. It's by Orwa Hehi Medurai and Comet. And you'll be able to get that book actually before you go. If you want to know the process and determining how you come about an African name, there's a process to it. If you want to make sure that your name is in sync with your destiny and that your name reminds you of your purpose in this incarnation, you definitely want to get the book and make it to the workshop. That is on February the 3rd, from starting at 5 p.m. And again, that's at 6224 3rd Street, Northwest Washington, D.C. The zip code is 20011, and the cost for that is $10. And if you'd like more information, please dial 202-723-5566. Again, that's 202-723-5566. My name is Jawanza. Now, I want to thank you again so much for your time. You could be doing anything. And let me give you the full name of the book, though, before we go. It's African Names, The Ancient Egyptian Keys to Unlocking Your Power and Destiny. And that's by Dr. Orwa Hehi Medura in Comet. He's the Paramount King of the Washington, D.C., HESP of the Osara Set Society. So you definitely want to make sure that you're at that workshop. Again, that's February the 3rd, starting at 5 p.m. at 6224 3rd Street, Washington, D.C. Zip is 20011. Again, thank you so much for your time. Again, for all of you entrepreneurs out there, make sure that you get the book. You'll be glad that you did. It will make an awesome gift for those who might not be entrepreneurs yourself, but you know, you might have family members who are striking out on their own. There's a way to do this, okay? Once you've meditated, okay, once you've chanted, once you've done the rituals, once you've done all of those things, and you've come out of the mosque, you've come out of the temple, you've come out of the HESP, you've come out of the church, now you can take those spiritual principles and apply them to your daily lives, but there are principles in business that you need to know, okay? And for just the cost of a book, it can save you a lot of headache, a lot of energy, a lot of time, a lot of money. And it can gain you a lot, too. So I encourage you to get the book. And until the next time, keep tuning in. Scroll down the archives for all of the new listeners. Welcome, welcome, welcome. Thank you so much for tuning in. Scroll down the archives. Again, I got two very important shows that Jawan just picks for the week. And they are the show that I just did recently, about 3 days ago, with Dr. Orwa Hehi Medura and Comet on EMF. Is it hurting our community? Electromagnetic frequencies. Is it hurting our community? Yes, it is. So I encourage you to scroll down the archives, listen to that show. That was about 3 days ago, so I'm not far down the archives. Also, did a show, awesome show, with Shechem Amhetra Hemmaat on meditation, more than just breathing and relaxing. Meditation, more than just breathing and relaxing. Okay, so definitely, that's also on the first page of the archives, and so you definitely want to check that out too, because you will definitely grow from listening to that. We definitely need to meditate because that's how we're going to make the transformations in our lives. That's going to be one of the chief proponents in helping us to make that transition into the divine beings that we were put here to be. Okay, so again, thank you so much for your time, everybody. I don't take you for granted. Again, you could be doing anything, but you've chosen to spend a few moments with my person and my special guest today, Professor Joseph T. Geiger. So until the next time, I appreciate you. Who am I? I'm the one who, in giving, receives more. Who are you? It's a poo.